This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Gibbs, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins, joined as always by Chris Novembrino. And Chris, we had the return of a WWE legend, a man who pops a crowd like no other, a guy who the people have been wanting to see since he's been off of our TV screens in quite some time. Yes, that's right, Chris. Wild Boar Mike Hitchman is back at NXT UK, baby.
It was a hot return. the crowd, I think when you saw the pan to the stands, you could really see just how electric it was.
Just how electric all those media members. Yay.
that black cavernous empty arena and the can noise really, really illustrated just how over Mike was.
I'm happy to have him back.
Actually, I got to say, like, joke aside, you told me to watch that NXT UK show. I bet you weren't sure if I was going to watch it, but I actually did. And let me tell you, it was totally worth my time. It was a really good episode of NXT UK.
NXT UK this week. You guys laugh at us when we went into it. And then when we stopped talking about it, how come you guys don't talk about NXT UK anymore? I'm just like, okay, fine.
Who's that jobber team that I like? Adam Jones or whatever, or Adam Davies and the smaller guy?
Yeah.
They had a nice little match against Symbiosis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
It still feels like it's treading water, though.
Ways. Absolutely. It's just an hour of television, but it's good.
I left for two months, and I came back, and it's the same people doing the same feuds. And anyway, Isla Dawn's there. Satamora,
yep.
Like, all right.
Charlie Dempsey's gnarly. I like
Charlie
watching
Dempsey's
Charlie.
Great. Yeah. William Regal's kid.
Yeah. I know that.
Okay.
I
in case some people didn't know that, yes, that is what William Regal's kid. We will be talking a little bit about William Regal on this show, I think. Quick news update. We are recording this Friday night after Rampage and after SmackDown. Big E got stretched out after a scary belly-to-belly suplex by Ridge Holland. Landed on his head. Broken neck is the prognosis, but he's in fairly good spirits. If you go to his social media, he's happy. He says he feels decent. He can move all his digits and stuff, but that the doctors are saying they think it's a broken neck. So, wow. Makes me sort of angry in some ways as to the end of his championship reign. Just a crappy 2022 for old Big E.
I was already angry about the end of his championship reign, regardless of this, because it wasn't like they were getting ready to get him started again or something. He was treading water before this, and now this is the sort of thing that will make Vince gun shy about ever giving him a meaningful push again.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know about that. I also think it's somewhat of an indictment of their training. And this is, like, I've liked Ridge Holland, don't get me wrong. But this is now injury number 3 in some ways. The first 2 he caused to himself, kind of. You know, or he hurt himself, and then this one, he hurt other people. I'm all for your big, jacked-up, muscle dudes, but... And these things happen. I mean, if you watch Revolution, first 30 seconds of Eddie Kingston, Chris Jericho, I thought Chris Jericho was paralyzed. I did. When he landed on his head in the half and half suplex. I just, you know, I know that there are dangers involved in this sport. It's just one of those things where it's like, maybe that's a move he shouldn't be doing. You know, clumsy people shouldn't be doing throws.
I mean, there are different moves for different size people, right? Yeah. And going back to your indictment on training, someone should be pulling these bigger guys around and going, okay, when you are having your enhancement matches against the whoop guys of the world, you can toss those guys around a little bit more effortlessly. They're not that heavy. But when you're wrestling in the ring against a guy the size of Big E or Sheamus or Drew McIntyre, you can't just toss them around the same way. You have to make sure you have coordination with the other guy so that they can get over.
Well, I also don't know if Ridge Holland is doing actual wrestling on his days off. I know he's working out, still jacked, still vascular, all that other stuff. But now that he's on the main roster, is he still going to a PC 3 days a week? And even if he's doing that, you know, it's a difference between drills and actual matches and things like that. I mean, I don't, you know.
It goes back to an indictment on their training, though. It's not even about Ridge.
I'm not even sure if it is. That's the problem I'm having here. So
you're saying it's Ridge Holland?
I'm saying it might have just been a freak accident, too.
Okay. I mean.
But okay. I want to hear your case that it's an indictment on the training.
I mean, we have had a number of situations here. Let's talk about Xia Li. These type of examples in recent months and year, the last year in NXT, where I think people are not actually getting really good training in NXT right now.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. I think they're doing.
And Xia Li is just off the top of my head, but I know there are other people who we were talking last week about that insane like error that Valentina Feroz got that I think you and I both thought was kind of questionable in terms of delivery.
It's the difference between, you know, hey, they're practicing matches and that's great, but there's a difference between that and just, you know, the old style of hitting the road and doing 7 shows a week and just learning and learning and learning how a guy moves and learning how throwing a guy affects him and things like that, that you can't get from throwing a heavy bag necessarily and things like that. I you know,
Nikita Lyons, is she ready for prime time?
No.
Last Legend, is she ready for prime time? There's a lot of people right now who
we're going to watch them grow on television. And you're just
we're
like,
going to watch them hurt each other on television. Yeah. Like ask Mercedes Martinez how that experience goes.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The other injury this week, Becky Lynch fractured voice box in a house show in Allentown, Pennsylvania against Bianca Belair. She was off of Raw this week. Still cutting promos in some ways, even with the fractured voice box, but, I wasn't sure if it was I saw a video of it. I wasn't sure if it was an elbow or if it was her hair that ended up doing that, you know, that whip with the hair, and she just meant to whip her with the chest. But I hope it doesn't.
I think she should lift Sammy Guevara's gimmick with the signs and
Becky. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
Becky just comes out with like a series of signs. It is like constantly harassing people with signs. She could go back to her pun gimmick and make pun signs.
Puns. I was thinking like she gets her voice back and it either sounds like Kane or it sounds like she's been smoking like, you know, the voice modulator or
no, she would totally ape on using the voice box thing. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm kind of here for that.
I'm here for that. I'm very in for that.
Or I kind of hope, you know, number one, you hope it recovers fully because you're always kind of afraid of that. But if it recovers where it sounds like she's been smoking 5 packs a day for 20 years and she kind of has that kind of grasp with her sense of humor, I think it'd be kind of amusing in my head for some reason. I don't know why that is, but I hope she gets better quick. She shouldn't miss WrestleMania off of this. But in other news, WWE's board of directors, reading here from Brandon Thurston, our friend at WrestleNomics, has given Vince McMahon and Nick Khan raises. What? Vince McMahon's board of directors? Well, I mean,
they've been extremely profitable. In the last couple of years here. And
Vince's salary for 2022 will be $2 million even. In 2021, it was $1.4 million. And this is reading from his tweet. If I understand right, Nick's second equity grant, part of his sign-on agreement, disclosed prior as $9 million, increases by $7 million to $16 million. Equity grant is a non-cash grant. That means he's probably got $16 million in stock.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the stock is good. You know, I feel like the stock price is sort of.
I'm shocked that it's been holding over 55.
It's been holding, right? Yeah, but I kind of think like it is where it is. I don't think it's going back to where it was. So yeah, I'd rather have $60 million.
Bobo the Wonder Chimp this week, it tells me he's been holding USO through the reverse split and it finally cashed in and he can finally get out of the dumb thing. But yeah, he that was pretty good. But going back to the news, new 8-part WWE docuseries WWE Evil coming to Peacock on Thursday, March 24th, executive produced and narrated by John Cena. Episodes are about Hulk Hogan, The Miz, Sasha Banks, Brothers of Destruction, Randy Orton, Stephanie McMahon, Ric Flair, and Roman Reigns. So these are going to be the contrived, ooh, I'm a bad guy.
I want them to all be damning exposés on every one of the named above. Like each one's just the worst skeletons in every one of their closets.
I'm kind of here for that, you know. did you hear that Miz once kicked a baby? What?
That Hulk Hogan one's going to be pretty darn long.
I think it's Hollywood Hulk Hogan. I'm sorry, Hollywood Hulk Hogan. So it's going to be, brother, I was part of the NWO.
I was the third man, brother. No one saw it coming.
Yeah, no one saw it coming. And when I hit that leg drop on Randy, oh, those thousands of people were all in shock.
They say Randy Savage died the next week.
Stephanie McMahon coming
you
out.
Yeah, you got to make the Hulk Hogan incredulous claim that someone dies 2 weeks after their encounter with you. He's done that going through his like record of lies. Hogan has done that on no fewer than 4 occasions. Andre the Giant, Kerry Von Erich, the kid who had cancer. There's like a litany of people. Oh, and Antonio Inoki died in the ring, but then survived. But that resulted in the Yakuza coming after Hulk Hogan. So those are 4 different occasions where an encounter with Hulk Hogan ended in death.
I was strapping Owen in to the heart.
I shook his hand, brother. We were flying on the plane.
Oh, God, we should not be mocking these things. But, yeah, it's going to be the same contrived WWE stuff, so whatever. Hall of Fame news. Both Vader and Sid going in with The Undertaker. The only guy we're missing right now is Dan Spivey to connect all these guys together. Let's get a Waylon Mercy induction in there. Let's do that. But yeah, Vader a little bit sad because, of course, it's a posthumous induction when his family were begging this company, please put him in while he's still living.
And he was doing appearances yes, for the company on a semi-regular basis.
Because he had to pay for his cancer treatments.
Yep.
He was trying to give this company. Well, now it's time to celebrate him. Oh, great. Thanks, Vince. Appreciate that. Sid is Sid, man. I mean, people trash him for the softball stuff, but I'm like, dude, he had hobbies. He had an interest outside of
his business. I kind of love it. As I get older and older, as I get older and older, I'm just like, you know what? Sid kind of rules. He really is the man.
Sid is kind of the guy that I'd like Kevin Nash to be at times, where it's like, it's that same vein, though. It's like, I just kind of want to work, get paid, get out of here and go play softball because that's what I find really fun. But you can never go watch Bash 88 and that Skyscrapers versus Dynamic Dudes match. And people want Sid to come in there and murder death both when Shane Douglas over, and Johnny Ace. When he is over, he is over. And his
so over.
He is over when he was a horseman. He was over when he was Psycho Sid. He was over when he was Sid Justice because he's just big and nasty looking, man. That dude just...
and intense. Like there's a charisma to Sid Udy, like the eyes, the hair, like all of it sums together to just be more. And like, yeah, of course we know what the Sid match is like. I'm not saying the Sid match is any good, but like, dude, that entrance.
Oh, he killed jobbers, man. He and Vader, to be honest with you, did it. But
But the Vader jobber kill like was great because Vader was creative every time. He had many different ways to murder death a jobber or two jobbers or three jobbers. And you know, Sid basically would just powerbomb them all maybe a couple of times. Like Vader would like take one, have him over his head, toss him at the other one, do
throw
a moonsault
outside the ring.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Like Vader was a lot of fun to watch do the jobber squash match.
He would, but Sid would throw guys outside the ring and stuff. I think, hey, when he was younger, he just didn't care about some of the guys too. He didn't have the respect. Hey, I'm getting paid. Screw this. Get out of here. And that was the what could have been, because in the skyscrapers, when Sid went down with the punctured lung, they brought in Mark Callis, a.k.a. Mark Calloway, a.k.a. The Undertaker, to team with Dan Spivey. But we never got the Callis Sid incarnation of the skyscrapers. And that's what everybody wanted when I was a teenager watching that. I was like, man, could you imagine the red-haired guy and Sid as a team? That'd be awesome. And we never got that. That's a shame. And, of course, Vader and Sid were part of that is that the White Castle of Fear? No, that was Vader and Sting. But they made the
Masters of the Power Bomb.
Masters of the Power Bomb. Thank you, Chris, for my college days are kind of a blur.
I have the WCW esoterica down, especially when it's Vader related.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have, like, you know, Vader. It's weird talking about the Hall of Fame with any degree of seriousness, because, like, let's keep it real, guys. It's just a payday. It's like an event. There's no actual Hall of Fame for you to go to. But Vader, to me, his biggest contribution is carrying WCW through that 93-94 period. Yeah, like,
oh, no, not 93-94. He was gone by
No, 93 is like his year. 93 is like,
oh, the you're right. Because 95 was when he left, I think. 95,
yes.
96.
Right. And it would have been interesting to see him against the NWO, like as like Sting's ally or whatever. Like Sting and Vader kind of coexist against the NWO.
No, and as we talked about, the coolest time was when they're starting to do that proto Rick Rude babyface turn right before he had the back injury on the ramp where he was going to fight Vader. And you're like, Rick Rude and Vader, man, I'm in for that.
Yeah.
Shut up and take my money.
No, there were a lot of good matches. And then obviously, you know, WWF, when they got Vader, Vince just did not like pushing Vader after the Gorilla Monsoon thing. Vader got injured.
No, this is the click. The click really did Vader in.
No. Right. So there's like two discrete moments that really did Vader in. First, there's the Gorilla Monsoon injury angle that also injured Vader. And so then they had to take Vader off TV. And then there is the Vader and Michaels pairing. Yeah. And Michaels just absolutely refused to like lose the belt, job to Vader, didn't like that Vader had bad hygiene issues, didn't like that Vader worked stiff, just didn't like ever showing any ass to anyone, didn't like ever putting anyone over, not unlike Hogan. And so like Vader's, the worst thing that ever happened to Vader is that it's like the 1-2 punch of working with Hulk Hogan and then working with Shawn Michaels, two guys who absolutely would never give you anything.
A-Kid to NXT, Roddy Strong to NXT UK.
Yeah, but what do we think A-Kid's new name is going to be? I have a couple of ideas. Let me throw them at you. We got, here, check it out. I've been thinking about this. I spent a lot of time. Jose. Okay, don't like Jose? That's fine. How about Miguel? Okay, all right, fine. Esteban. Louise?
This might be going over people's heads now. So let's...
You got Gunther, you got Butch. And so I'm just saying, you get Esteban, and that's fun. That's multicultural too.
Hold on. Come in here, Bruce. Where, how are you saying that name?
Esteban.
It's Esteban, damn it.
Esteban. Yeah. And then A-Kid has a guitar next week.
Oh, he's El Mariachi.
No, like Esteban, the guitar player who sells the crappy guitars.
Oh man, that's a deep pull. I forgot about that dude.
You can still find his amps and stuff floating around Craigslist. They're crappy.
Maven announced for Joey Janela's Spring Break 6. I'm here for that. Whatever Maven's going to do in the independent scene great. Other independent bookings of note that I'm kind of into, FTR with Loverboy Dennis Condrey seconding them, taking on the Wolves, Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards at ASW Wrestling in Beckley, West Virginia on June 11th. Shut up and take my money. I'm here for the FTR indie tour where it looks like now post Dynamite, that they're just going to be bringing in some of their idols to be seconding them as opposed to Tully Blanchard. Well, talk a little bit more about that segment, I think, when we get to the Lazy River. But I'm here for FTR versus the Wolves. I think that'll be a fun match.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by where FTR is going, although we can get into more when we get into the Lazy River.
Well, it won't be the Briscoes, unfortunately. That Fightful reporting that AEW doesn't have any interest in them due to Jay Briscoe's tweets from 2013, because nobody changes in 9 years. but yeah, there's those have stood still, and that now their role in ROH might be up in the air, but we'll see about that. But title changes of note: Ricochet is your new Intercontinental Champion from last week. Didn't get to that during the show. Our apologies. RK Bro, your Raw Tag Team Champions. Dolph Ziggler, your NXT Champion, and Scorpio Sky, your TNT Champion.
Yeah, I want to apologize to listeners for not talking about Ricochet getting the title last week. I think, honestly, this really changes his trajectory in the company.
You're such a jerk.
No, this is the start of something, Hawkins. This is the beginning, not just like a little blip and not a bump in the road. I would suspect that next WrestleMania, we're talking about Ricochet Mania.
It is rumored that Dolph Ziggler is the NXT champion because Bron Breakker is on his way to the main roster.
Well, Dolph Ziggler is the NXT champion. No one's rumoring that.
I
get what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm being complicated, Hawkins. I think it makes sense that they want to move Breakker up to the main roster. They've been trying him out for a minute here, and he's at least as ready as Rich Holland.
Oh, that popped me. Ratings this week: AEW Dynamite 945,000 viewers, 0.40 in the demo, 560,000. WWE NXT Roadblock 613,000, 0.13, 176,000 in the demo. 500,000 old people are watching this show. What? Anyways, it's their highest in the demo since January 25th and highest total viewership since February 1st. It was senior night on USA Network, apparently. WWE Raw, 1.775 million viewers, 0.45 in the demo. Lowest on USA since January 17th. SmackDown, 2.261 million, 770,000 in the demo. It's a friggin'... SmackDown's killing it, kids. Compared to these other shows of this, Rampage, 545,000 viewers, 0.22, 287,000 in the demo. Any thoughts? That NXT number blew me away. 613,000, there's like 500,000, 500,000 old people watching Roadblock.
Yeah, and I just continue to wonder if those are just televisions that are on.
Yeah.
Are there really 500,000 old people who love NXT like that? I don't know. The Rampage numbers, the AEW numbers, have to be a little bit frustrating for the company.
I would think so.
Yeah, the product is pretty solid across the board here, and like Rampage to not be picking up momentum.
Friday's a death spot though. Friday at 10 p.m. Tough.
It's tough, but they're not holding their audience. They had more people, and like, I mean, you're now what they, you said 541. That's pretty low.
And what Rampage? Rampage is 545,000.
Yeah, 545,000.
Yeah,
that's pretty low compared to where they've been.
I think they're going to have elevated numbers next week because they're on after the NCAA tournament, so you'll just have TVs that are on then.
How did Dynamite do again?
Dynamite had, hold on here, let me find the number here, 945,000.
That's not bad.
And over half of those were in the demo.
In the demo. I mean, like, that's the saving grace for Dynamite, right? But like, yes. you still, if you're AEW, hoping to keep it above 1 million at this point. And so I don't know. And then SmackDown, I think that it's the network. I'm interested what the lead into SmackDown does, because
it's local syndication.
I don't understand how SmackDown could do so many more viewers than NXT or like Raw do. So, you know what I mean? Like, I get that there's some degree of a drop off, but
broadcast is easier to get than cable. It always has been.
Yeah. But like, what was Raw numbers? Was Raw numbers compared to NXT?
Compared to NXT?
Yeah.
Oh, it's 1.1 million more. It's about,
so it's more like 1.6.
Yeah, 1.7, 1.8.
That's a massive hemorrhage. Yeah, and they've been featuring these NXT guys on Raw. You're not even getting 1/3 of your audience to cross over.
Yeah. That's
what I'm saying. Like there's real disconnects with this company, and like this NXT product just it stings.
I'm gonna make a judgment call here and not put this in the lazy river because we've already mentioned it here. But yes, to end the news segment. Pete Dunne has made his debut on the SmackDown roster as Sheamus and Ridge Holland's friend Butch, wearing the Newsies English page boy outfit. We're pretty sure it's a pull from the Little Rascals. I have not asked for confirmation on that, but I think it's a pull from the Little Rascals character. Just a half a step above saying shine your shoes, Gubna. I want him to have a shine box, Chris. I want this character to have a shine box, and then they can shove him and go, Butch, get your shine box. And he gets angry. Go get your shine box. And he starts beating up people because of it. I don't know. I just Gunter.
You know what's fun, Hawkins?
Butch. Veer still coming.
Yes.
Ladies love Veer.
Let me tell you something, Hawkins. Do you know when the first Little Rascals cartoon was made?
1937?
How close was I? 1922.
Holy mackerel.
It is a 100-year-old pull. I want Butch to come out on a quarter penny bicycle.
Oh, the ones with the big wheels in the front?
Yes, yeah, and okay. His entrance needs to be in black and white.
He can do the old vaudevillians theme.
Black and white, and like, yeah, the vaudevillians, yeah. Yeah, what was the lower frame rate, too?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, you look at Pete Dunne, and you look at all the things he's done in NXT, NXT UK, as a champion, in War Games matches.
What is the point of this NXT title?
You look like a Butch.
What is the point of this NXT title? Same thing with Gunther. If you're going to do these massive programs, these prestige programs where you have... I'll circle back around to that in a second. You have these prestige programs where Pete Dunne, Walter, like face all of these different people multiple times, high profile matches, extended times. These are like 4 and 5 star matches on a regular basis. You build equity into these wrestlers only to bring them to the main roster and give them a nothing burger name, a name that dresses them down. Because it's impossible to imagine intrigue, excitement at the same level for Walter and Pete Dunne if it's Gunther versus Butch. Like, yeah, I can't wait to see Gunther face Butch again in the rematch.
WWE superstar Butch. not Butch Franklin or some other name. Butch.
Bush.
Also the name of a bushwhacker, by the way. But just... what? Look, the note I got was, look, you have to take the ride that the crazy old man gives you. And he's going to get a WrestleMania payday out of this. So that's a good thing. But at the same time, it's like, dude, I'd be brushing up my resume because, I mean, he might stick around for a while, but.
No, this is a brand hurting devil, gimmick. Yes.
Cesaro, you know, the land of the one name Euros, other than Sheamus, who's tall. Like this is a little guy. Look like that little rascal.
Cesaro might get renamed Swiss here soon enough.
And of course, we have to put all the Europeans in a faction together because, you know, They're all friends.
Yeah, of course.
They're all from the same part of the general map.
Basically, why would the same country? Gunn,
you know, they probably walk down the street and run into each other in those small, tiny third world nations in the UK. What is that crazy old man thinking? This guy's a killer. And he called him Butch.
100-year-old reference.
Or it's, the other reference I can think of is the old bulldog from the Tom and Jerry cartoons, which is only about 15 years old, but younger. And that, you know, the bowler and the sweater type thing. Hey, Butch, we gotta go out.
Yeah, but that's more the big bully Busick.
Yeah. 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 Odd, because that was the reference I was going to use when I was going to talk about Ridge Holland, was he has two left feet. Like, oh no, that's Bruiser Bedlam. I was thinking Bruiser Bedlam's the guy. Who had two
big left bully feet. Busick kind of had two left feet too.
Yeah. Yeah. That was unfortunate.
Great mustache though. God, like a premier mustache.
Stunning mustache. Hall of Fame mustache. If wrestling mustaches had a Hall of Fame, him, Steiner, Harley Race, Triple H's homage. Yeah, there's plenty of mustache. Dan Severn, I think, would probably go in there. Good guy. Ole Anderson.
Yeah. Oh, Severn for sure. The mustache on Severn's pretty epic.
All right, enough of this nonsense. I'm closing up the news desk. Chris, tell us about HelloFresh.
Okay. So HelloFresh is our sponsor this week. And HelloFresh is a deliverer of pre-portioned ingredients to your door, including farm fresh produce that arrives within a week so that you get convenience without skimping on quality. Skip the trip to the grocery store, saving you the wait in the long weekday lines and ensuring that you don't waste money on excess food. HelloFresh will cut back on the time that you spend in the kitchen so that you can spend it on other things like being nice to me, Jeff, for a change. Because now you have your meals ready in 30 minutes or less. You'll get quick and easy meals, including 20-minute recipes and low prep and easy cleanup options. So that if you have miscreant cats who try to ruin your life, you can clean up quickly and then scurry off to your designated eating spot where your cats can't harass you. And that'll provide an even faster route to putting food on the table, or in my case, in my closet where I eat free from the cats. And don't forget dessert. You can satisfy your sweet tooth with seasonal, limited-time goodies like Dunkaroos, cookie dough, or Vanilla Delight cheesecake. So we did have HelloFresh here not that long ago. Hawkins and I both enjoyed it. I'll tell you what's going on right now. Like, literally as we were taping this, upstairs I've got the crock pot going in my food bunker. That is, you know, free from the cats. And I used what I had left over from that Tuscan spice, that Tuscan heat spice that we got with the mozzarella chicken, Hawkins. Mm-hmm. I love that. I had the first little thing of the packet and I made like the dish. And then I was like, nah, I got to save this other packet. This thing's great. So I was saving it and I'm using it again. So you end up getting ingredients. You'll have stuff left over. If you're someone like me who tends to spice up dishes and play around with different things, and it's fun and exciting to cook. We got a great offer here for you all here. Hawkins likes to say VOW 16. I don't say VOW 16. I say VOW 16. That's the code though. So you'll go to HelloFresh.com/VOW16. Or as Hawkins likes to say it, VOW 16. And that'll get you up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Remember, that's HelloFresh.com/VOW16. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
Always a good ad read when Chris buries his host during. We thank HelloFresh for their sponsorship. Now, time for the patented, amazing, stupendous even.
God, they love the word stupendous, don't they? Like the advertisements, Hawking.
Stupendous. Lazy river of wrestling criticism. Anything we watch, and there was a lot to watch this week, anything that comes to mind about the world of wrestling, Chris and I are just going to talk about what we want to talk about until we can't talk no more about it. And as is tradition here, after a large pay-per-view, I was going to say big pay-per-view, but for some reason I said large pay-per-view. kind of large. Revolution, AEW style.
I'm not done with Stupendous yet, Hawkins.
You aren't? Okay, go.
What no, I think this is it's really funny that WWE's marketing team has centered in on Stupendous, not just like as a buzzword for this WrestleMania campaign, but like as the marquee word to describe this particular WrestleMania. It's not just the thing commentary says. They've made entire advertisements that is just like a montage. People like Pat McAfee and stuff going, Stupendous! And then the word Stupendous. Yeah, like, yes, he's clowning them. They're using it unironically. And then, like, the word Stupendous is emblazoned on the screen. Like, this is not a word that's in the vernacular in any way. And when you say Stupendous, it's almost like kind of cheesy and quaint. Like, oh, it's nifty. Like, if you said it was the most nifty WrestleMania ever or something.
We can't call it great. Can't call it excellent. We need a
it's
word.
Gonna be bopping. No, like, bopping. Come on, stop.
Yeah, you know, it's like abeyance or quadrennial. They can't say normal words. So, you know, what sounds like stupid that we could
they are always normal adjacent, just like Gunther and Butch. They're like almost normal sounding names. They're adjacent to normal, but not quite there. Now we were going to get into Revolution. Hawkins, quit distracting us. Let's get to the meat and potatoes here.
I enjoyed Revolution. I thought it was a fun watch, although 5 hours, pretty long damn pay-per-view. I get it. I'd love for them to just say not everybody can be on and do everything. You know, the jam band was strong on this pay-per-view, but it was still a lot of fun. I'll run down some quick thoughts because I do an AEW show. I did an AEW post show over at Fight Game. You hear my hot takes there, but I thought the three-way tag title match over-delivered in so many ways between Young Bucks, I almost called him Young Dragon, Red Dragon, and the Jurassic Express. I really thought that Luchasaurus really brought his A game for this one. Didn't, you know, the usual time where he gets tired or he's, you know, as he goes, he's trying to do too much in terms of the spots. He starts getting a little sloppy. I thought he was really, oh, look, Kingston Jericho, fantastic brawl type match to open it up. And as I said before, thought somebody had died 30 seconds in, which always makes for an interesting pay-per-view start. The dog collar match, you know, became a story match versus a quote unquote brawl match after a while. Thought there was a lull in the middle there of a few minutes. My one gripe about it was that if you have a dog collar match, you don't need anything else like thumbtacks. That drives me nuts. Just make the dog chain more violent. That's all you need to do for it. But I liked the Wardlow turn. Thought that was very, very well done. Brian and Mox, of course, fantastic. Regal coming out, playing dad to the straight A student and the adopted kid who's a juvenile delinquent. It's just fantastic comedy right there. I adored that. And the main event, really my only, forgot. The six-man tornado was actually my favorite match of the night because it was just chaos the entire time. Sting's jumping off a balcony, which is insane. I liked it because it felt like an old ECW arena type of six-man tag. But the main event was fine. I think it was overpraised by a lot of people. I think they definitely did not anticipate the quote-unquote, what I like to call the dusty moment of karmic retribution, where he took the belt and tied Adam Cole's wrist around the top rope. They started booing that. And then the Dark Order comes down and he shoves Alex Reynolds. Seemed a little heelish there. When you're trying to get over him as a top babyface, I thought that that really kind of took me out of the energy of the match quite a bit. That's why I kind of I don't do star ratings like my friends do and stuff like that, but it's like, well, it didn't hit me like it should have for a main event world title match because of those things for some reason. It's just the characterization to me was a little sloppy on that part. Your thoughts or anything that I said that tickled your fancy on that?
All right, I guess I'll do a match by match here then. So I thought that the Chris Jericho Eddie Kingston match was Chris Jericho's best match in an extremely long period of time.
I'm with you there. I really am.
Really surprised. I don't care for him. I mean, I think his instincts around the matches and stuff are always questionable. Like, you know, this story's not firing on all cylinders, do they ever. But that match, that was a really darn good match. The AEW World Tag Team Championship, I thought that Jungle Boy Luchasaurus ended up looking really good in this match. And even though it was, of course, about Red Dragon and the Young Bucks, I think that Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus had a strong enough showing there that it ended up still being a good showcase for them.
Sneaky, entertaining was the fact that Bobby Fish was way too close to a microphone at all times. He was basically doing commentary for the first half of the match. I would pay an extra dollar for Bobby Fish mic'd up during a match. That's how good he was.
Face of the Revolution ladder match. A little WWE for me. You know, Wardlow winning, fine with a lot of moving pieces in the Wardlow story here. I'm fine with him getting the ring here.
Over Keith Lee.
I probably would have actually, honestly, given what we're now doing with Wardlow, I probably would have given the Keith Lee. Like, if you're having Wardlow get out of his contract, you're sort of stealing my thunder here from the CM Punk match. That's fine. Let's talk about the three beats of Wardlow then. You have Wardlow winning this ring. Then we get to the CM Punk match where, like, he gives the ring to Punk and, like, breaks up with MJF.
Right.
That's not given time to breathe. Then he comes out and basically announces this, I want to just be out of my contract thing.
Yeah.
That's not really given time to breathe. So looking back to it, if you're going to do this whole, I want to get out of my contract, WWE meta commentary sort of thing, then really someone other than Wardlow should have won the Face of the Revolution ladder match, because right now Wardlow's got his business, got a lot on the line for the contract or whatever. So like a little too much, probably would have put it on Keith Lee now.
Or at least space it out a bit, those beats of the story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then we had Jade Car Crash versus Tay Conti. This was weakest match on the show. Not bad.
The best women's match on this show was on the pre-show.
Yes, I agree. I did not think that Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker delivered, but like I thought that was just due to overbooking. Jaden Tay Conti, like, it was what it was. You can enjoy the gesticulations and stuff or whatever, but like the actual between the ropes, come on, guys. CM Punk versus MJF. What a great match this was. This is like a really good match. I'm with you on the, you don't need extra Hazarai if you've already got a dog collar in there. Just tie him up, like come up with new creative spots with the dog collar. Other than that, I mean, just a really great, intense match. Love the callbacks. Rewards you for paying attention to the previous matches. Just a really great match.
Really great match.
Yeah, like, you know, Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa, already kind of went into that. I just, too much stuff going on here. You don't need Jamie Hayter and Rebel. Like it went too many times with that. And all of this is basically to stall things off so that you can have Thunder Rosa beat Britt Baker in San Antonio. But now you've really given away the finish to that match.
Yeah.
Like, so that's my problem here. Jon Moxley versus Bryan Danielson. Fun match. But now let us talk about the finish here, Hawkins. Everyone's thrilled about Regal coming out, uniting with Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson. They're making a new team. What the hey? It's going to be a lot of fun. Regal's doing a promo. A lot of fun. Love the Regal promo. Warms your heart. Great to see him back in the ring. You're rooting for William Regal. If you would just, I sit and listen to you go through an entire card. You can't let me get through two matches without stepping on everything and trying to ruin my thunder.
This is for the HelloFresh thing.
The butt is your large butt getting in my way every time I'm trying to make a fantastic gem of a point, Hawkins.
Here we go. Go ahead.
Yeah. The butt is that this is an absolute concession that Bryan Danielson, as a heel, as the evil mastermind, the guy who's going to turn all the young guys or whatever, that incarnation didn't work. And that ultimately what works best for Bryan Danielson is him as a babyface. And that this whole heel push for Bryan Danielson did not actually work all that well. It never really clicked. He's fun. There's certain things about this new character and his new match style that you can authentically enjoy. I enjoy it too. It's a nice change of pace from his straight babyface match style. But now that he's settled into this tag team with Moxley and Regal, he's going to absolutely be a tweener trending towards face. The crowd's never going to let these guys be earnest heels. And there's not actually even good people on the AEW roster for them to work earnestly heel against, which means at the end of the day, Bryan Danielson as a heel, it didn't work. Oh, and one last thing about Jade Cargill. A lot of people love Jade Cargill Hawkins. Here's the thing about Jade Cargill. The biggest defenders of her will say, you know, Chris, you dink. She's not very good. Well, actually, I think she's good, but you don't think she's very good. But she's training on the job. Remember when they used to come at me about Red Velvet? And when I said that Red Velvet should have beat Britt Baker, not because, like, Red Velvet was necessarily championship material, but because, like, she was ready at that particular moment in that feud against Britt Baker. Yes. Like, if it's going to fly, if you're okay with it with Jade Cargill, you should have been okay with it 6 months ago with Red Velvet, honestly. Anyways, moving on here in the card. I'm not done, Hawkins. And then we get to the tornado tag. Dude, Sting rules. Like,
yes,
if you are not, if you're not loving Sting, I don't know what you're doing with your life. You don't actually enjoy professional wrestling. This guy's amazing. Like he's just this last stage in his career is as exciting to watch as any of the other phases of his career. And it's really crazy to say that.
You know
about
what it is for
man.
Me? This is modern day Crazy Terry Funk.
Yeah. Like it's almost more than that, because like I could get excited for Sting doing one last title chase sort of thing against like an MJF. Like this Sting can still Ooh. Work at a level that entertains a title. I'm not saying belt Sting. What I am saying is Sting still works at a level that could absolutely be entertaining at a main event program level.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't, you know, like you, do you need a little bit of smoke and mirrors? Sure. Absolutely. But like, dude, he's such a joy. He always gets up for these big matches.
Yeah,
he always does. And then the main event, I'm with you. I do not feel like Colin Page delivered. And this is my, like, I guess my third I guess I told you so sort of moment with like Page, which is, for months on this show, you and I have been talking about, and like we're sort of a minority opinion in the wrestling commentary, that Adam Page as a babyface is not really clicking with this audience. It's something is just not hitting there. And, you know, I think it's easy to sort of dismiss us as like kind of weirdo oddball opinions, and rightfully so.
You're old.
I'm odd, you know, like I have my, you know, sort of esoteric way of looking at all this stuff. But that moment where what should have been karmic comeuppance that everyone was ecstatic about, seeing Adam Page get his revenge, Adam Page get his revenge on Adam Cole, got met with abject hostility. And that was not designed to be a double turn spot. It was absolutely like you could say that there were supposed to be little flashes with the pushing off Alex Reynolds thing. Absolutely. Okay, sure. But that spot was not meant to be it. That little tie up Adam Cole thing. No, people were supposed to be excited to see Adam Cole. And like, they should have been excited when he hit the buckshot and everything like that. And they were not.
It would have been karmic retribution if for weeks they had been tying him up to the ropes and doing that. They did it on the go home show for a quick,
because they hotshotted that whole program.
2 minute program, 2 minute thing at the end of the night. And you're supposed to then cheer for him when he gets revenge on it. No, this is something you need to build.
Was there all of 3 weeks to build that program?
If like, you had tied him up for 3 weeks.
When did Cole first come out and say, I'm not going to challenge you, and then have Red Dragon attack him. What was that, 3 weeks ago?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, this is your world title program. Your world title. I'm not blaming this all on Adam Page. I want to be clear.
Yeah.
I want to be really clear on this. I think, especially you hear the guy talk, you watch the guy's matches, there's clearly stuff, like this guy can connect with an audience. This is presentation. And I feel like time and again, Page has been set up to fail. I'm not saying this like an inside job on Adam Page, but like the Danielson program, you paired Adam Page with a heel who is not really clicking as a heel. People were more excited to see just Danielson kick people's ass than they were to see Adam Page beat Danielson. You have him go up against Lance Archer, a guy that no one thought he was going to beat. And then you have him sort of get jump-started into a program against Adam Cole, the resident cool heel who has been presented as the cool heel, who is also presented on screen as the boyfriend of the other cool heel women's champion, Britt Baker, DMD. you send Adam Page into this meat grinder. He's not even close friends with the Dark Order. Like, time and again, your way of adding intrigue to this babyface character is you make him a shithouse friend to his friends. Like, that's the go-to characterization move for Adam Page. How was Adam supposed to connect with us as a babyface? And don't tell me that this whole time was just to slowly cool him down for a heel turn. No, he was supposed to be a babyface champion. This was supposed to be a babyface push. It has not worked.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't think he'd be a good heel either. I'm going
to
say that.
No, they're going to bring him back to the conflicted crap that they had him with Omega, and he's going to get stalled out again. He's going to go back to
days
emo
of our
crap.
Lives stuff. Yeah.
He's going to start drinking again. I mark my words, he's going to start drinking again. He's going to have a world title match drunk, Hawkins. He's going to lose the title drunk.
He's going to be Jeff Hardy?
Maybe. He loses to MJF drunk. That's how he loses the belt.
Oh, my God. That would be the worst.
Oh, it would. But 25% chance they do it.
I think they're going Page Punk.
I think so, too. You saw Punk do the little belty poo thing. Like, yeah. And if they should turn him before the Punk match, because if they don't turn him before the Punk match is going to turn him.
Speaking of all this, let's go over to Dynamite, which was a stuffed sandwich of a show. They put on a world title match without any announcement whatsoever, except at like 5 p.m. Oh, we're gonna have Dante Martin and Adam Page. Okay, great.
And then more inconsistent characterization there at the end of the match, where like I think if you're going to start pivot into Page being a heel, at the end of the Dante Martin match, Page shouldn't have done anything heelish to Martin. But
he
should
healing him. I don't think they're healing
no,
him.
No, then they had him. Well, but then like he sort of apologized. You know, I don't know what the hell they're doing, because they had him apologize to Dark Order, but then like he sort of didn't make them his tag. Like, you know, like he didn't actually go full baby on that either. Like,
yeah.
If you were you'd be like 10 and, you know, Silver, you guys are my tag team partners.
That segment was so poorly staged, and I'll tell you why. Because Alex Reynolds need to be the guy front and center there, not John. Corpse
John
Silver.
Doing
his little comedy shtick there. I needed a sincere apology to Alex Reynolds. I'm sorry it happened to me. And then first of all, Adam Cole comes out and they go, I want the title. Cool. Let's have a six man next week. It's like, no, you want the title? Go after the title. So we get that, and all the drama in this is who's going to pick who for what team or whatever. You leave that till next week. You don't announce it 5 minutes later where he goes, I ran into the Jurassic Express in the hallway and I said, blah, blah, blah. And if you're going to do that.
No, but this whole drama around the partners, it distracts from the belt, right? Like, if you want to have a drama around the partners angle, don't have it centered around your main belt.
But even worse, it's like I ran into Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, and they want a piece of the Bucks. Okay, whatever.
Why?
Then you just leave it at that and you walk away And you don't do the silver, hey, Anna and I could be your tag team partners, waka, waka, waka.
I found the Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy thing, though, to be a real sloppily placed. Hold on. It's a sloppily placed MacGuffin in the sense that Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus just beat Red Dragon and the Young Buck. It would make so much more sense if they had lost the titles at the pay-per-view for them to want to pair with Adam Page than it does fresh off a victory over them.
Yes. But the entire story between Page and Cole is Adam Cole going to pick the Bucks or is he going to pick Red Dragon? And then Adam Page should pick the other team. That's the story here. And we put in Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy in it. And you're like, and we give away who Cole's picking an hour later with that vignette. And you're just like,
and then the Young Bucks, we're supposed to love them all of a sudden when they've been heels for months. I have real contempt for the, you just love the Young Bucks, don't you? Sort of thing that like AEW does. There's just like an aw shucks quality. I get it. They're the vice presidents of the company or whatever. But what I'm complaining about is they have been working as heels and not just heels, like mocking heels. Ones who like go to great lengths to like poke fun at their babyface opponents for the last several months here. And I guess one redeeming character grace or the thing that like, we've always been wishing for them, I suppose, for them to turn babyface again and rejoin Adam Page, except that that's not actually a seed that was ever really meaningfully planted other than in the moment where they turned their back on Kenny Omega. I just feel like the babyface intrigue of the Young Bucks is extremely unearned. And they have maybe love, of course, inside of the core fan base who are just going to be involved in whatever the Click 2.0 wants to do here. But I think for the average fan, you know, why would you all of a sudden like want the Young Bucks to be aligned with Adam Page when they have not actually been very good people for the last several months?
But they gave him the look when he won the title. It's like, okay, whatever. That's your long-term storytelling. Great.
And in that moment, how am I supposed to process that? Is that look?
Yes.
How much does that mean? Because like that, yes, they could have stopped Adam Page from winning the title, but they didn't. So does that mean that Adam Page won the title as his own man? Or that he didn't win the title as his own man, and therefore it was really significant that the Bucks did that.
Do you want to continue in Dynamite, or do you want to take a refresher away from it and then come back to it?
No, let's continue on Dynamite.
Okay, so we have two different, I mean, it seems like we've now broken up the Pinnacle, and we've broken up the Inner Circle in various
Boy,
segments.
The Pinnacle breakup, though, was just in this, like, fragmented, incomplete way, and it very unsatisfying with yes. MJF not featured on television in either of the two segments. You can sort of make this case for dramatically withholding him from the Wardlow segment, although it really beggars belief, especially when you have Tully Blanchard also leaving. Like, MJF's entire empire is crumbling while he's away from TV for an entire week here.
Let's take the good. Wardlow is a damn good promo in terms of being able to talk. Maybe not with the content necessarily, but he can hold your attention throughout an entire, even if it's a little bit of an expository promo in some ways. It was very much kind of a Drew McIntyre type of promo. Some people say that adversity.
The story is not very good, but he has a good delivery.
Yes, he does. Yeah. And it's a shockingly good delivery.
Yes.
For me. And that holds well. Now for the poor. Flags at half mast, kids, because I'm very, very sad about the Tully Blanchard FTR breakup. I'm even more sad that it was so poorly done. Look,
Ryback had a better breakup than the FTR Tully breakup.
I get the story that wrestling used to mean everything, and now it's family. But this is the Horseman Ole breakup where Tully Blanchard, you want to go spend time with your family? Screw your family. You're here to win championships. I have a family. I have a daughter kind of thing. You need to invoke that a little bit, but it wasn't well delivered. FTR is the team that needs a manager, in my opinion. I think Tully's done a good job. There's rumors they may bring in Bret Hart. I think that's you know, if they're going to do classic guys coming in for short runs, that's fine. But get a guy in his 20s or 30s who can take a bump for you and who can talk for you if you're going to do that. But just the delivery of family and then Cash coming in, and Tully wasn't able to earn the anger in that whole promo. I hated it. I really did. I hate it. Not just for the end, but just because, you know, Tully can bring it. Tully could make FTR angry at him if he wanted to in the promo, because he did it all the time. He did it with Spears, for God's sakes. He was a goofball at the time. He pissed him off in a promo. It was fantastic. If this is Tully's swan song, let Tully go out being Tully, for God's sakes. The Weasley, opportunistic, doesn't care about anybody but himself type of guy.
Yeah, I think you also need to have either Dax or Cash stand up to Tully verbally. So, like, yeah, you need Tully to try to cut down Dax or Cash. Maybe say something like, look, your daughters are going to grow up looking at their fathers who can't win a championship, who haven't won a championship in 15 years.
Yes.
Something like that. And then
what he did for the Ole Anderson angle, where he goes, you want to go your snot-nosed kid or whatever, just that little triggering adjective to get the anger in there.
Yeah. So, you know, something about them being losers. Daddy's a loser. You know, you're going to teach your kids how to be losers just like you. And you know, that sets off Dax or Cash or both of them.
Yes.
And they unite around that. And that becomes like sort of a defining moment for them. I think it's important in that moment, especially if you're going to have them go managerless for a minute here, this is where they need to say something that really connects with the audience. And I don't think that moment necessarily happened so cleanly. I think they could have done that a little bit better. I don't know how I feel about like the rotating cast of managers and senseis that feels a little like MSK with Matt Riddle or whatever. I think I've seen that movie, and I think it only has limited returns.
I would love it if Tully got to bring in another team. Like, maybe he does manage Brock Anderson and Lee Moriarty for a while. Take him off of Arn's hands and turns him to the dark side. But if it's a swan song, I had fun watching it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it would be interesting to see Tully as like MJF's manager.
Yeah, I think they'd make a great duo.
Yeah, they actually would. You know, maybe that's the answer here. Is it like, you know, you have Tully managing MJF, and then Sean Spears is there as the goober.
I can take that. And then we had the Jericho Appreciation Society.
What a name. Just catchy. Just catchy.
Now, 75% of this turn, I enjoyed the hell out of, because I liked toned down Chris Jericho. I thought this was the best acting of his career. Mr. Groundlings play it big sketch comedy guy. Being sincere, I bought into it for a while. And when they threw him down and it was the, oh, I'm just going to put my knee on you for a little bit, I go, okay, now it's on. I thought that was very clever. And Jericho grabbing his neck and stuff.
Yeah.
What I don't like, I don't want Jericho to be the head of the stable. I want Daniel Garcia to be the head of the stable. And I want Jericho to be the old guy holding on for relevancy. I like that they toughened up 2.0. I think that's a good move on their part. Is there a fifth? Oh, Hager. Let me talk about Hager, because he's the 25% that just sucked in this for a couple of reasons.
No. Hawkins, the acting during that existential crisis.
Yes, that's what I'm about to talk about.
It was beautiful.
He has a three beat.
Powerful.
He has a three beat storyline he has to go to, and he got through it in a second and a half, because he was probably afraid that he was taking too much time, and he didn't take enough time. To the point where he did it so clownishly that looked
what
like
are you doing?
Yes, you come out and you go, you're panicking because your group is disintegrating in front of your eyes. And then you're supposed to have the moment of doubt where you're like, what am I going to do here? And then it's the reserved, okay, the hell with it. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to help my friend Jericho and turn heel. It's a reluctant heel turn, but it's a heel turn.
He didn't even go reluctant in the third beat. In the third beat, he went completely embracing evil. Like,
yes,
when he did
and
the
that
club,
was the problem.
It was like, ah! So it was like, I don't know what to do. And then it was, ah! Like,
yeah, so it made it look facetious, even though it wasn't supposed to be, I don't think. I think it was actually supposed to have more depth than it did, but
it was like a three-panel cartoon.
Yes, it was just like, oh god. And then they almost kill Eddie Kingston, putting him through a table. It takes five guys.
Oh
to get him
my
up
god! Dude, that power bomb. Kingston was so lucky that he wasn't just at a slightly worse angle, because yeah. Like, man, that looks so bad.
Yeah, I couldn't.
I cringed watching them try to get Kingston up, and then like the way he came down, I was just like,
because
I
do
like that.
Because I do a beat by beat recap of Dynamite. What am I missing here that I need to go over, Chris?
Okay. Well, we obviously still have Scorpio Sky.
Yeah. Is this the hot potato title?
Oh yeah.
What we're gonna
do? No. Because Sky is gonna retain against Wardlow because MJF is going to resurface. The submarine is going to come up out of the water. Like that's the whole reason why you had this weird thing. Like MJF's gonna cost Wardlow the title match.
Do you think he costs Wardlow the title match, or he just takes control of the title? That's my question.
No, I think he cost him the title match.
Because remember, Wardlow, everything that Wardlow has belongs to MJF due to the contract, and he's not an official wrestler. So, hey, even though you wrestled this match, you're not a wrestler with AEW, and I own you, so that belt is mine. I think Sky might be a transitional champion.
No. Sky hangs onto the belt because the MJF contract match is going to be the ring. The face of the revolution ring or whatever.
Okay.
For the contract.
Yeah.
MJF's gonna want to get the ring.
He's scheduled for the match though on Wednesday, so they're just gonna not do it.
No. They're gonna do the match, and MJF is going to cost him the title match on Wednesday because the feud is Wardlow trying to get his liberation from MJF. And the leverage point here, like who has what that the other one wants. Wardlow wants the contract, being released from the contract. Obviously, MJF's not going to give that to him. MJF, greedy bastard, is going to want the big golden ring. And that's the leverage point. That's what they're going to feud over.
Cool. Anything else in Dynamite you want to talk about?
I don't think so. Okay. No, the Acclaimed match was fine. Yeah.
They're fun. It's just weird that they, and also that they just went to Layla Hirsch immediately and beat her right after the Statlander match.
Oh, you know what? The Regal promo. I guess the one line that stuck out was like a sore thumb that I'm sure everyone's been talking about is the "I don't have much time left" line. Do we know anything more about that?
That got a bit of an uproar on wrestling Twitter today, but it turns out to be nothing, I think.
It felt really out of nowhere.
Well, basically what he was saying was Regal liked his partying. Let's put it that way. He was one of the boys on the road, and he'd been doing it since he was 14. But Meltzer kind of got from Jericho the indication. I'm not going to say Jericho told him anything because I don't know for a fact. But that because Regal is the host doing the usual exit interview from WWE on Talk Is Jericho this week, that he was going to reveal some sort of health problem. And then Regal came out later today on Twitter and goes, "I've never felt better. My doctor says I'm very healthy. There's nothing wrong with me." So there's a bit of a scare there for about half of today.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, rightfully so, based off of what he said in the promo. I don't have much time, you know, like, if anything, when he was like, "They're gonna, you know, be wheeling me around at the in the old folks home," I'm like, "Regal, healthcare is like not that bad."
I didn't realize he was 53 though.
He's 50.
That's young.
53 is young, right? Yeah, like my dad is 71. He's got like had a knee replacement surgery. He's not like petering around the old folks home.
That's when you think about how long he hasn't been a wrestler. I mean, that's like Michael Hayes as Doc Hendricks at 35, and your mind is blown that they think people are old in their mid 30s. Yet you're Sting jumping off of balconies and stuff at 62, or however old he is. Yeah, I loved that promo, even though it was a little long winded, but just the it's It's the dad with two sons. You, my darling, my favorite son, my all-A student. Oh, how you name dropped me everywhere you went. Oh, you I found in the trash, and I had to keep you. That kind of dynamic with Mox.
I mean, the one thing that stood out to me is just the kind of complete abandonment of the we're going to start a school and train all these young guys thing. Yeah. Like, this is just a complete dropping of that storyline entirely. Don't get me wrong. I'm in for the babyface tag team. I'm not faulting it. I'm just observing that when people talk about Tony Khan as this master booker who like has all the gears in place and all the pieces and the dominoes all are perfectly in line or whatever, I think people are missing sometimes like the misses and the dropped beats. Paige Van Zandt's coming after the, speaking of drop beats, Paige Van Zandt's going to be back after.
Oh, that Paige Van Zandt, Ty Conti train wreck. That's going to be something.
That's going to happen.
But I wanted to bring up one other point about the whole Regal thing is we have another case here of the second overshadowing the act, in my opinion. Don't get me wrong. Bryan Danielson, megastar. Jon Moxley, megastar. But this is a William Regal act.
This is what happens when you just throw together stuff without, like, you know what I mean? I like all of these guys.
Yes.
But it's so clear that they don't know where this is going right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
They have no idea where this is going. In the absence of direction, what has happened is we are all the most excited to see what Regal is going to do. Because Regal's the new piece of the puzzle.
Yes.
We've seen Moxie be champion. Danielson has now been babyface and heel in AEW. Did that in under a year. Good for you. So now Regal is the new thing. And Regal is now, I guess, the plot device here. And I don't know that you can move the whole story through Regal. I like him. I love him. He's great.
What is he, 6'5"? I mean, he is a tall dude. I mean, it just overshadows, you know, I think he's a little tall. He's even taller than Mox. Not sure about that,
but there's something about Regal's reverence for Danielson makes the height disparity thing not relevant in the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's not a commissioner or something though. I'd much rather have him be in a speaking role where he can cut promos.
Oh, and that's why I'm not too hard on him about this promo here. Was it a little long in the tooth? Sure. He also has not done a loose form promo like this probably in the better part of 20 years.
Correct.
And he's going to have to get back into the groove of doing that.
I like to
Once he does that, and also like, I can't wait for Regal on commentary. There'll be great moments where he gets to be in the booth and being cheeky and fun. And I think he's going to be a real delight.
Just replace Starks, who is okay, and Jericho on that Friday with Regal, I'll be fine with that.
Oh my God, give me Regal and Taz and Shivani. That would be the greatest booth. That would be such a great booth.
Because Shivani just wouldn't know what to do with himself.
No, and Regal and Taz would oscillate from being ridiculous to talking in depth about wrestling and knowing everything about every wrestling hold. And I think they would actually have a good ability to sort of navigate between those two points. I'm so there for that. Yes,
I'd be so there for that. I will end my, because we're going a little long here, my thing on a positive note about WWE, actually. I adored both the Austin video response to Kevin Owens, even though it kind of played the hits for him, and also the Pat McAfee video that was released on social media today is outstanding. It really is.
He has serious Diamond Dallas Page energy in the sense that this is a guy who's getting started way late in life, but his promos are so good that, like, let's say he went to AEW and you put this guy on a 3-year push, the dude's 34. I really believe with like a serious arc, a serious push, this guy would be as over as freaking anyone by the time he's 38, 39. He would be like a white hot star, sort of like with the national brand, like the biggest star in wrestling for real. Like, Pat, I know it sounds like a lot for Pat McAfee or whatever, but we've seen this guy.
His enthusiasm is genuine.
It's genuine. And we've seen him hang in the ring with Adam Cole. He clearly has taken the training seriously. He clearly understands how to do a promo. He's good on the microphone. Like the things that he's maybe needs work on still, selling, for example, other things of that sort. That stuff can be trained. He's trainable. I just like Pat McAfee is a very impressive guy in this business, and WWE's never going to utilize him to his full ability. But if they did, I really do believe he could be over like a Diamond Dallas Page.
Don't get me wrong. The fight with Austin Theory was a little rough when I think he was trying to do a cross body.
My dude last week doing the promo was not there.
There are times where he's not perfect, but that video is just so good. And he can talk. And that's,
and he can get up for the matches too.
He can get heat. He can be hated or loved. I adore the guy because it's like, he's the only thing that keeps me watching SmackDown, to be honest with you, at times, because I don't know if he's going to just say something that ticks off the company to the point where he gets fired one week, because he likes throwing in his little references to his pharmaceutical activity.
Between the marijuana references, let's go Brandon.
Yes.
The guy's great. But for all the wrong reasons, but I mean,
he's a loose cannon. He's a legitimate loose cannon.
In a show that is, you watch so that Ronda Rousey in Charlotte. My favorite moment in that promo tonight was the one where the crowd was supposed to be chanting "You tapped out," and Charlotte couldn't get the crowd there, so she goes, "I can't hear you," and then she still couldn't hear them, and then Ronda had to go they're all laughing at you, acting like the crowd had just uproariously chanted at. I could see the WWE script in both of their heads with the brackets of crowd chants, "You tapped out," and they're both waiting for that beat to happen and it never came.
Pause for effect.
Yeah. Pause to get crowd reaction.
Then Ronda says the stage directions. That's what I was waiting for. Pause for chant.
Ronda smirks.
Ronda's face cracks as she emotes. God, she's such a bad promo. It's so ridiculous. How do you
I have the new ankle lock promo. Was as dynamic. It was like Tony Khan had possessed Ronda Rousey's body in terms of dynamism.
How do you get somebody who had this much heat in UFC and not know how to generate heat with Ronda Rousey?
Well, you insist that she's presented as a baby face instead of a heel, which she shows so obviously should be. So obvious.
Find your Misha Tate, you dopes. Anyways, you have anything else for the Lazy River?
Well, let's talk about NXT.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff happened in NXT this week, Hawkins. I know you're like, it went long, or we're going long, or whatever.
It's just NXT. NXT is one of those weird things where I hate it, but there are things that are interesting on the show at the same time, like Dakota Kai and Wendy Chu.
Let me get that victory cigar out. Who said
you did.
Dakota Kai? Yeah, I did. Nov said it. Not anyone else. Everyone else is like, no. Nov was like, yes.
Because your theory, because logic would tell you, okay, the comedy team ain't getting to the finals. Nope.
and Jen, just like I told you last week, Fallon Henry was going to defeat Tiffany Stratton. Henley.
Let's go the other side of the bracket though in that Dusty Women's Classic. I thought that match over delivered a bit because Casey and I always forget her name because I want to call her Lacey Lane.
Caden Carter,
thank you. I think this is possibly their best match in the Fed against Kaylee Ray and Io Shirai. Of course, it's going to be good, but
Casey looks like a team now. They've clearly matured as a tandem. Yes.
Yeah, and look, I don't think Casey has many years left with this company, to be honest with you, because I don't think she's main roster bound. I don't think people are going to remember her from American Ninja Warrior, Obstacle Course, the game show, whatever you're going to call it. It's Obstacle Course, the game show. I'm sorry. but I thought, I thought maybe they might give them the win here. I thought maybe they might let them win the whole damn tournament for like a tag title shot somewhere or something like that. But, you know, Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray, of course, are fantastic, both of them separately. So together, they're great, too.
Yeah, I mean, hard not to enjoy that team. They've got great chemistry.
Dolph Ziggler's the right guy for this world title.
You know, he's an interesting pick, and especially with Bobby Roode having also been an NXT champion, like this has, I have no faith in them to actually tell an interesting story with this, but this actually has the formulas or the pieces or the spare parts laying around where, like, if you were like, ask me to sit down and draft this out, I could come up with something interesting with Ziggler and Roode.
Yes, in the hands of a competent storyteller, this would be so fantastic. Because Ziggler could talk about how he had been at the top of the mountain on the main roster, how he, you know, push after push, he'd been through terrible rebrandings. Now he's coming down to see all these kids who are coming to take his job type of thing. And he's paired up with another veteran who never quite caught on how he probably should have. You know, they're the old gunfighters. I like that a lot.
Ziggler's just firm belief that he deserves to be in a main event somewhere, even if it's not on like the main roster, and like that the reason he wants this title is so that he gets the most TV time or something like that. Yeah, or like
let him cut Dolph promos. Don't give him beats or anything. Let's see what Dolph can do on a promo on his own, and let's see what he does with it.
I think he still needs a story to operate within, because I know what Dolph Ziggler's default promo is. I've heard it a thousand times. Yeah, I've heard it a bunch.
He needs a manager.
He needs prompts.
Give him Bivens. The hell with it.
Bivens managing Ziggler and Roode presented as NXT champions, like the legacy champion in Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler as the champ, not as the dirty dogs.
No.
But like in a different presentation, very intriguing.
As respectable veterans who have come in to slap around the kids.
I just have no faith that they're going to go that route. I just don't. Nope.
That said, again, I'm going to make a culpa of this. LA Knight, I like him on this show. I do. I mean, everybody poo-pooed him when he came back. All he is doing Rock and Austin style promos, blah, 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 blah. He has a connection with the audience.
Yeah, absolutely works. He's a guy. Look, he is like Jeff Hardy. Who we also have not talked about, so I guess we should mention him too.
Let's talk about that real quick. Dancing before you save your brother.
It was a momentary dance. Okay, here's the thing. Hawkins, if you were getting beat up and like I came down, the crowd cheered for me, I'd real quickly wave to them as I'm running down, and then I would make the save. Yeah, like
thanks, Chris.
Well, no, it's not like, okay, you're gonna take maybe one more punch, but do you really want me to like leave thousands of people hanging?
The adoration, I need to soak it in.
A lot
for
of people
second.
Like to see me hump the air. Like, you know, I have this signature air humping thing that I do. It's great. People love that.
Can I mention though that today on Rampage on Rampage, again, we've fallen into the WWE trap where it's like they are dressing like they are 23 years old.
And they got the music, the original music. The thing that really cracks me up is like Hardy was really excited in Jeff Hardy was really excited in WWE that he was able to use one of his weird Oxygen songs as his theme song. And then like the second he gets into AEW, they go back to what is the song that Paroxygen just ripped off, like the production music song from the mid 90s that everyone knows is a jam. Like everyone no one knows the name of that song, but like everyone knows that. But then everyone's like, this is a jam.
Stock music.
It's stock production music. Andrew Rich knows the name of the production album it comes off of, but like it was just readily available stock production music. But like, this is the Hardys that everyone wants. And this is sort of the quandary too with the Hardys, which is that like, this is the Jeff Hardy everyone wants. And let's go back to the LA Knight thing. There are some people who just connect with fans, and it doesn't necessarily make sense. Like to me, Jeff Hardy, he is a very, he's a guy who's willing to commit on getting beat up. I'm not going to deny that. He puts his body on the line. His selling is not necessarily the most emotionally connecting. His offense, to me, has never been particularly crisp-looking. I don't think Jeff Hardy has a very good sense of storytelling in his matches. I don't think Jeff Hardy's a very good promo. And people freaking love him.
Yes.
They love him to death. This is the same conundrum for a lot of people that I get that like a certain segment of the wrestling fan base just does not get with LA Knight. There are gaps in LA Knight's game. No denying. But the stuff that LA Knight does is more than enough to get him through. And like people love him. He just can come out there and immediately connect with an audience in the same way that Jeff Hardy. Yeah, he says yeah. Jeff Hardy humps the air and people love it. Like I mean, there are some people they just have this ability. Guys, that's how it works. That's how it is.
I think we can end there.
That's it.
I'm good. It's been Shake Them Rubs. You can follow me at Crap Game 13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. You can also find me over at Fight Game Media. I do a show called The Dynamite Show every Wednesday with Paul Fontaine. He of the man who asked about CM Punk's entrance, and CM Punk roasted him. Talked about that this week.
The theme song was very confusing. They played that. I didn't even know who
I
the
didn't
guy
either.
Was. Nope.
I saw
the man and the face. I get very dissociative when the theme song does not match the person who walks through the curtain. It for me.
Oh,
it's
but
like
Chris,
not
it
being
did
able
because
to
it was
faces.
A callback to his Ring of Honor days that everybody knows. I just it was.
Well, it was I'm razzing all of you, but
I know.
Like, yeah.
I know. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was a joke. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I thought you were serious.
No. It's at least you're apologizing to me for.
I feel shame now. I feel shame.
No, I wish. I wish. Don't worry about the government. Can be found at DWATG on Patreon, patreon.com/DWATG on iTunes and on Stitcher. And if you are in Lubbock, Texas, next Friday night, come on out to the Blue Light. Come and see your boy Novi playing with Logan Samford in Lubbock, Texas. So, you know, if you're coming out for WrestleMania weekend in a few weeks here, why not come a few weeks early, drive 5 hours in the wrong direction?
I'd also like to thank HelloFresh once again, HelloFresh.com/VOW16. Free meals, free gifts. See you next week.
Lubbock.
Worst outro ever by you, Hawkins.